She touched Quinn's arm. God bless you.
Yeah. Let's hope so, huh?
He wanted to stay and talk to her. Anything to avoid climbing up on the roof with a machine gun. But Mary had her duty, and he had his. He was ashamed to realize that he yearned to go into that daycare room and just hide in there with Mary. He went through the daycare to the alleyway in back. He slung the machine pistol carefully and climbed the rickety aluminum ladder. The daycare and the hardware shared a roof. It was flat, gravel and tar, adorned only by several vertical pipes and two ancient air conditioning units. The roof was encircled by a parapet, a 3-foot-high wall topped with cracked Spanish tile. Quinn went to the corner facing the church and town hall. He watched as Sam and Decca marched off.
Don't screw up today, Quinn told himself. Just don't screw up.
The ladder rattled, and something blurred over onto the roof. Quinn swung his gun around. The blur resolved itself into the figure of Brianna.
You have got to stop doing that, Brianna, Quinn said.
Brianna smiled and said,
The Breeze. My name is The Breeze.
You are way too into this,
Quinn grumbled.
I mean, what are you, 10?
I'm 11. I'll be 12 in a month.
Brianna pulled a claw hammer from her belt and brandished it.
Kane and Drake had me starving to death with a cinder block on each hand. I wasn't too young for Kane and Drake to almost kill me.
Yeah.
Quinn wished she would go away and leave him in peace, but it was her assignment to move between Quinn and Adelio and Sam and anyone else, carrying messages.
So, how fast can you go, Brianna?
I don't know. Fast enough that people almost can't see me.
Doesn't it kind of wear you out?
Not really, but it kind of tears up my shoes.
She raised one foot to show him a worn sole on her sneakers.
And I have to keep my hair in pigtails or it whips around and stings my eyes.
She gave her braided pigtails a toss.
Must be weird, having powers.
You don't have any?
He shook his head.
No, nothing. I'm just me.
You know Sam real well, right?
He nodded. It was a question he got a lot from Coates' kids.
Do you think he'll win?
She asked.
Guess we'd better hope so, huh?
Brianna looked at her hands, the hands that had been imprisoned in concrete.
That's why it doesn't matter that I'm just 11. We have to win.
Sam fought a sense of doom as he walked with Decca toward the school. He wasn't afraid of getting hurt, mostly. After all, he expected to end the day by poofing, and then, well, he didn't know what. The dread was fear of failure. Whatever happened to him, he had Astrid to think about. And little Pete, because Astrid would be shattered if anything happened to little Pete. Not to mention the fact that little Pete might be the only one in all of existence who could end the phase. He had to beat Kane for her. For them. For all of them. All the kids. And that weighed him down like he was carrying an elephant on his back. He had to win. Had to make sure Astrid was safe. Then he could blink out if that had to be. But the closer he got, the more he doubted his decision. He was deviating from the plan, which meant no one would really know what role they were supposed to play. Kane going to the school had thrown everything off. They stopped a block from the edge of the school grounds. Sam keyed the walkie-talkie.
Has anything changed?
No,
Astrid said.
The cars are parked. Panda is by the front door. The light's fading fast, so I can't be totally sure.
Sam?
Yeah?
I think Panda has a gun.
Okay.
Be careful.
Uh-huh. He signed off. He wanted to tell her one more time that he loved her, but that seemed almost like tempting fate. He was already thinking too much about Astrid, and not enough about Kane. Okay, Dekka. There's no way to sneak up. I have to be within sight before I take Panda down. Dekka nodded. Her mouth was tight, like she couldn't open it at all. She was breathing hard, tense, scared. I'm going to count to three. On three we go. All out. As soon as I can, I try to nail Panda. You do your thing when we get to the door. Ready? She didn't answer. For what felt like a very long minute, she just stared at emptiness. Then, at last, she croaked,
I'm ready.
One, two, three! They burst from cover and started running, flat out. They closed the distance to the edge of the school grounds and were pounding across the turf before Panda spotted them and yelped. Don't do it, Panda! Sam warned, yelling as loud as he could while running. Panda hesitated, hefting the gun, not quite raising it to fire. I don't want to hurt you! Sam shouted. 50 feet away, Panda aimed and fired. The bullet flew wide. Panda gaped at the weapon like he was seeing it for the first time. No! Sam yelled. 30 feet. Panda raised the gun again. His face was a fright mask of fear and indecision. Sam dropped to the ground, rolled, and came up in a squatting position as Panda fired again. Sam extended his arm, fingers splayed. The green-white light missed Panda and burned a hole in the brick beside his head. Panda threw down the gun, turned, and ran. 10 feet. Dekka, get the door! Dekka raised her hands high, and gravity beneath the door was suspended. The whole wall, including the door frame, lurched suddenly, as if struck by a truck from the other side. The door swung slowly open. Loose dirt and fallen mortar shot straight up toward the sky. Dekka dropped her hands, and the dirt fell back to earth. The bricks slumped and cracked. The door jamb sagged and splintered. Sam fired into the dark interior through the open door. He and Dekka barreled through and slammed back against opposite walls, panting and ready. Paper signs and once colorful posters on the walls burned and curled from Sam's blast. There was no sound. Sam glanced at Dekka. She looked as scared as he felt. They edged along the hallway, nerves taut, eyes searching each doorway. The office was on the right side, fronted by a reinforced glass wall. Sam crept closer, peered inside. Nothing. Lights still on from the day of the phase. Should he move on without checking the office thoroughly? If one of Kane's people was in there, Sam and Dekka could end up surrounded. Sam made a motion to Dekka. Go in. Dekka shook her head violently.
Okay,
Sam said. I got it. He crossed the hallway quickly and opened the door himself. Something large flew at him. He ducked instinctively, but he'd been hit. Smacked a glancing blow that spun him around. A boy with dark hair was crouched atop the school secretary's desk. He held a wooden club, short and thick, in one hand. The boy grinned. Then he leapt again, fast as a jungle cat. Sam was caught off guard and landed hard, banging his head on the floor. He saw stars. He rolled over, but the move was sluggish. The boy had jumped away to safety and was gathering himself for another assault. Suddenly, the boy, the papers and mementos on the desk, and the desk itself lifted off the floor, flew straight up and smashed into the low ceiling. The boy had just long enough to register surprise and pain before Decca restored gravity and he dropped like a rock. Sam reached him before he could recover, knelt with one knee on his chest, and grabbed his head with both hands. "Twitch and your head's a cinder," Sam said. The boy went limp. "Good decision," Sam said. "Decca, get his club. Find some duct tape." To the boy, he said, "Who are you? And where's Kane?"
"I'm Frederico. Don't burn me up."
"Where's Kane?"
"Not here. They all went out the back as soon as we got here. They left me and Panda."
Sam's insides twisted. "They left?" Frederico read the fear in Sam's eyes.
"You can't beat Kane. Him and Drake, they have it all scoped."
"I found tape," Decca said. "You want me to tie him up?"
"It's a diversion," Sam said. He punched Frederico in the nose, hard enough to distract him. Frederico roared in pain. "Now tape him up. Fast." He keyed the walkie-talkie. "Astrid." Her voice was barely audible.
"Sam. Oh my God."
"What's happening?" Her answer was too garbled to understand. But in snatches of static, he heard fear.
"I screwed up," Sam said. "It was all a trick."
42. 2 hours, 23 minutes.
"Quinn! Quinn!"
"Is someone yelling my name?" Quinn wondered.
Brianna pointed at the steeple. Quinn squinted and saw Astrid in dark silhouette, waving her arms like a crazy person, pointing, gesticulating, yelling something.
"I'll go see what she wants,"
Brianna volunteered. She blurred, then she stopped suddenly, having just reached the top of the ladder.
"Oh my God, look!"
Racing through the street, coming up from the south, pouring down the alley, came a swarm of rough, yellow canines. They threaded through parked cars, bounded over fire hydrants, paused briefly to sniff at garbage, but overall moved with shocking speed. They were going straight for the daycare. Brianna began pulling the ladder up. Quinn jumped to help her. They slid it up and out of the way as the first coyotes passed beneath.
"What do I do?"
Quinn cried.
"Shoot them,"
Brianna said.
"Coyotes? Shoot coyotes?"
"They're not here by accident,"
Brianna yelled. One coyote, hearing them, glanced up.
"Quiet,"
Quinn hissed. He crouched behind the wall and clutched the machine pistol to his chest.
"Quinn, they're going after the littles,"
Brianna said.
"I don't know what to do."
"Yes, you do."
Quinn shook his head violently.
"No. No one told me to shoot coyotes."
Brianna peeked over the side and sat back down very suddenly.
"It's him. Drake. And he's... there's something wrong with him."
Quinn didn't want to look. Didn't want to. But Brianna's ashen face made looking the less terrifying option. He rose just enough to get a view of the alleyway. Swaggering along behind the coyotes came Drake Merwin. He held in his hand a long, thick red whip. Only he wasn't holding it in his hand. The whip was his hand.
"Shoot him,"
Brianna urged.
"Do it."
Quinn unlimbered the gun. He laid the short barrel on the Spanish tile and aimed. Drake wasn't running. He wasn't moving furtively. He was right in the middle of the alleyway in plain view.
"I can't get a shot at him," Quinn said.
"You're lying,"
Brianna accused. Quinn licked his lips. He aimed. He wrapped his finger around the trigger. Impossible to miss from here. Drake was no more than 30 feet away. Quinn had practiced firing the machine pistol. He had fired it at a tree trunk and seen the way it chewed through wood. Squeeze the trigger, and the bullets would chew through Drake the same way. Squeeze the trigger. Drake passed directly below.
"He's gone,"
Quinn whispered.
"I couldn't,"
he said. From the daycare below, there came the screams of terrified children. Mary Terrafino had had a very bad day. That morning she'd had a major pig-out, a real gorge-a-thon, as she called it. She had found a carton of snack-sized Doritos. She'd sat and torn through 24 snack packs. Then she had vomited it all back up. But even that didn't seem like enough to cleanse her of the offending food, so she had taken a strong laxative. The laxative kept her running back and forth to the bathroom all day. Now she was sick to her stomach, wrung out, seething with anger at herself, ashamed. Mary usually popped her pills in the morning, her Prozac and vitamins. But she was so frazzled as the day wore on that she had also popped a diazepam she had found in her mother's bathroom medicine cabinet. The diazepam spread a gentle mellowness over her mind, like molasses poured into gears. On the drug, everything was slow, frustrating, fuzzy. To counteract the diazepam, she poured herself a cup of coffee in a covered safety cup, stirred in sugar, and carried it with her into the classroom. That's when Quinn had walked through carrying a machine gun. She had shielded the kids from seeing him, but there was something deeply disturbing about the sight of a machine gun in the real world, not on TV or in a video game, but right there in front of her. Now she sat cross-legged in circle time. A dozen kids paid varying degrees of attention as she read "Mama Cat Has Three Kittens" and "The Buffalo Storm." She had read all the books so many times she could do them by heart. Other kids were in various other corners playing with dress-up costumes or painting or stacking blocks. Her brother John was doing diaper check on the Tinies, as they now called the Prees who were still in diapers. One of Mary's helpers, a girl named Manuela, was bouncing a little boy on her knee while trying to get a marker stain out of her blouse. She muttered under her breath as she worked. Isabella, who had become Mary's shadow since being brought to the daycare, sat cross-legged and looked over her shoulder. Mary followed the words with her finger, word by word, thinking maybe she was teaching Isabella to read a little, and feeling vaguely good about that. She heard the sound of the back door opening, probably Quinn wandering back through. A scream. Mary twisted around to see. Screams and a torrent of dirty yellow shapes piled into the room. Screams as the coyotes brushed children aside, knocked them down, overturned easels and chairs. Screams from little throats. Screams and little faces filled with terror, eyes pleading. Isabella bolted, panicked. A coyote was on her in a flash, knocked her to the ground and stood over her, teeth bared, growling. His slavering muzzle was 6 inches from her throat. Mary didn't scream or cry. She roared. She leapt to her feet, bellowing a word she would never have wanted the Prees to hear. She beat the coyote's shoulders with her fists. "Get off her!" Mary cried. "Get off her, you filthy animal!" John tried to run to her aid and let loose a strangling cry. A coyote had the back of his hoodie in its jaws and was worrying it, shaking it like a frenzied dog with a chew toy, choking John with each twist. Manuela stood frozen in a corner, hands over her mouth, rigid with fear. The coyotes, excited and wild and agitated, yipped and jumped and snapped at everyone around them. A little boy named Jackson yelled at one of the coyotes,
"Bad dog! Bad dog!"
The animal snapped and made contact, leaving a bloody scrape on Jackson's ankle. Jackson wailed in pain and terror.
"Mary!"
he cried.
"Mary!"
Then, an aged, mangy coyote snarled, and the animals calmed a little. But the children were all crying and wailing, and John was shaking, and Manuela was clutching two of the Prees to her and trying to look brave. And then Drake stepped into the room.
"You!" Mary raged. "How dare you scare these children this way!"
Drake snapped his snake-like arm. The tip of it left a red welt across Mary's cheek.
"Shut up, Mary."
The whip crack had silenced some of the children. They stared with appalled amazement as the girl they had come to think of as their guardian touched the wound on her face.
"Kane won't like this," Mary warned. "He always said he'd keep the children safe."
"You'll be safe," Drake said. "As long as you keep your mouth shut and do what I say."
"Get these animals out of here," Mary said. "It's almost bedtime."
Bedtime. Like that would mean anything to the dogs or to the monster before her. This time, the whip snapped and wrapped itself tight around Mary's throat. She felt blood pounding in her head, tried and failed to draw breath. She dug her fingernails into the scaly flesh of the whip, but couldn't budge it.
"Which part of shut up do you have a problem understanding?"
Drake yanked her close.
"You're getting all red in the face, Mary."
She struggled, but it was no use. The living whip was as strong as a python.
"Now you need to understand something, Mary. These dogs, as far as they're concerned, all these little kids are just so many hamburgers. They'll eat them just like they eat rabbits."
He unwrapped his tentacle from her throat. She sank to the floor, sucking air through a throat that felt as narrow as a straw.
"What do you want?"
Mary rasped.
"Drake, you have to get these coyotes out of here. You can have me as a hostage, but the children don't know what's happening, and they are scared."
Drake laughed cruelly.
"Hey, pack leader, you guys won't eat the kids, will you?"
To Mary's astonishment, the large, mangy coyote spoke.
"Pack leader agreed. No kill, no eat."
"Until?"
Drake prompted.
"Until whip hand say."
Drake beamed.
"Whip hand. That's their affectionate name for me."
Isabella, who had shrunk back into a corner, came forward with her hand extended, like she wanted to pet pack leader.
"He can talk,"
Isabella said.
"Stay back,"
Mary hissed. But Isabella ignored her. She laid her hand on pack leader's neck. The coyote bristled and made a low rumbling noise, but he did not snap at her. Isabella stroked his harsh ruff.
"Good doggy,"
she said.
"Just don't get too close,"
Drake said coldly.
Good doggy may get hungry.
He took the bait,
Panda reported.
He's got some girl with him, too. She has some kind of mad powers, like I don't know what to call it. She kind of makes stuff fly off the ground.
Diana Ladris said,
It must be Dekka. We predicted she would be a problem. She and Brianna. Maybe Taylor if she's improved her skills.
They were in a home belonging to no one any of them knew. Just a house on a back street, a block from the school. The shades were drawn. The lights were left just as they had been. No one came or went through the front door.
Right now, my brother is rushing toward the daycare, Kane said.
He could barely contain his glee.
He fell for it. He absolutely fell for it. See, the thing is, I knew he'd try to play hero and come after me. Yes, you're brilliant,
Diana said dryly.
You're the master of all you survey. Even you can't get on my nerves. That's how happy I am,
Kane smirked.
Where's Jack?
Diana asked. When Kane scowled, she said,
See, I still know how to get on your nerves.
Diana knew that Jack had been driven from the highway into the desert. Panda and Drake had reported that. But she didn't know what had happened after that. If Kane got his hands on Computer Jack, Diana had no doubt that the techie wizard would give her up. What would Kane do then? In the meantime, Diana had to play it smart by pretending to be concerned by Jack's escape, or defection, or whatever it should be called. It would throw Kane and Drake off the scent. Unless they captured Jack. She fought down a wave of fear and hid it by pouring herself a glass of water at the kitchen sink. In the safe house, in addition to Diana and Kane, were Howard, Chunk, Mallet, and Panda. Panda was badly shaken by his run-in with Sam and Dekka. He would occasionally mutter something like,
A hole blown right through the wall! Could have been my head!
Chunk had tried entertaining them with the same Hollywood stories they'd all heard a million times before. Kane had threatened to turn him over to Drake if he didn't shut up. Howard was no less irritating. He sat and stewed and whined from time to time about going to look for Ork.
Ork is a soldier, man. If he made it back here, he'll be over at the house we used to live in. It's not that far. I could sneak over there. He'd be good to have around.
Ork's dead in the desert,
Panda said harshly.
You know those coyotes got him.
Shut up, Panda!
Howard yelled. The other person in the little house was Lana. Ever since Lana had demonstrated her healing powers, Kane had insisted on keeping her close. To Diana, she remained a disturbing mystery. Her eyes seemed always to be looking at something far away. She rebuffed attempts at conversation. Not angrily, not like she was upset by any of them. More like she was in a completely different place, worrying, reflecting, seeing something completely different. There was a shadow over Lana, a hollowness in her eyes. Kane paced back and forth from the open kitchen area into the family room, back and forth. He had started biting his thumb again in that stupid way he did. He stopped and threw up his hands and asked Diana,
Where is he? Where is Bug?
Bug was one of the freaks who had signed up with Kane right at the start. Long before the phase, back when Kane was first discovering his powers, learning to control them and learning to recognize others like himself. In those days, it was all about getting control of the school environment. Coates had never been a nice place. Half the kids in the school were one kind of bully or another. Kane had just been determined to be the head bully, the bully who could not be bullied himself. Bug had always been a little creep in Diana's eyes. He didn't rise to the level of a true bully. He was closer to being a Howard-like creature, a bootlick, a toady. He was just 10 years old, a nose-picking gross-out artist. But then his power manifested one day when Frederico threatened to kick his butt. Bug, in terror, had disappeared. Only he didn't really disappear. It was more that he seemed to blend in, like a chameleon. You could still see him if you knew he was there, but his skin and even his clothes would take on the protective coloration of whatever was behind him, like a mirror that reflected his background. The result could be pretty creepy. Bug standing in front of a cactus would seem to be green with needles poking out.
"You know Bug," Diana said. "He'll show up to get his strokes. Unless Sam or one of his people spotted him."
At that moment, the front door opened and closed. Something moved that was hard to see, hard to make sense of, like a wave in the wallpaper.
"Here's Bug now," Diana announced.
Kane leapt at him.
"What did you see?"
Bug shut down the camouflage and emerged clearly, a short, brown-haired, buck-toothed kid with a freckled nose.
"I saw a lot. Sam is in town, right across from the daycare. He doesn't look like he's doing anything."
"What do you mean he's not doing anything?"
"I mean, he's standing there eating Mickey D's."
Kane stared.
"What?"
"He's eating. Fries. I guess he's hungry."
"Does he know Drake and Pack Leader have the Littles?"
Bug shrugged.
"I guess so."
"And he's just standing there?"
"What did you expect him to do?"
Diana demanded.
"He knows we've got the kids. He's waiting to hear what we want."
Kane bit savagely at his thumb.
"He's up to something. He probably figures we have a way to watch him, so he's making sure we see him. Meanwhile, he's up to something." "What can he do? Drake and the coyotes are in there with the kids. He has no choice. He has to do whatever you tell him to do."
Kane wasn't convinced. "He's up to something." Lana stirred herself, looked at Kane, seeming to hear him for the first time.
"What?"
Diana asked her.
"Nothing,"
Lana said. She patted her omnipresent dog.
"Nothing at all."
"I need to go do this now," Kane said. "The plan was to wait till we were close to the birthday hour. That way he loses no matter what. You think he can take me, don't you?" "I think he's had a couple of days to prepare," Diana said. "And he's got more people. And some of his people, especially the freaks from Coates, really, really want you dead."
She stepped closer to him, right up in his face.
"Every step of the way, Kane. You listen to me, then you do exactly what I've told you not to do. I told you to let the freaks go who didn't want to play along. But no, you had to listen to Drake's paranoid advice. I told you to go into Perdido Beach and make a quick deal for food. You have to go try and take over. Now you're going to do whatever you want, and you'll probably end up screwing things up."
"Your faith in me is touching," Kane said.
"You're smart. You're charming. You have all this power. But your ego is out of control."
He might have lashed out, but instead, he spread his arms wide in a gesture of helplessness.
"What was I supposed to do? Coats? That's it? How do you not see what an opportunity this is? We're in a whole new world. I'm the most powerful person in that whole new world. No adults. No parents or teachers or cops. It's perfect. Perfect for me. All I have to do is take care of Sam and a few others, and I'll have complete control."
He was making fists by the conclusion of his rant.
You'll never have complete control, Kane. This world is changing all the time. Animals. People. Who knows what's next? We didn't make this world. We're just the poor fools who are living in it.
You're wrong. I'm not a fool. This is going to be my world. He slapped his chest. Me! I'm going to run the phase. The phase is not going to run me.
It's not too late to walk away.
He grinned, a dark echo of his once charming smile.
You're wrong. It's time to win. It's time to send Bug to Sam with my terms. I'll go,
Diana volunteered. It was foolish. She knew what he would say, and she could see the light of suspicion in his eyes.
Bug, you know what to say. Go.
He pushed Bug away, and the chameleon blended into the background. The door opened and closed. Kane took Diana's hand. She wanted to pull it away, but she didn't.
Everyone out of here, Kane said.
Howard got heavily to his feet. Lana as well. When it was just the two of them, Kane and Diana, he drew her close into an awkward embrace.
What are you doing?
She demanded stiffly.
I'm probably gonna die tonight. That's kind of melodramatic, isn't it? One minute you're invincible, and the next...
He interrupted her with a rushed, lunging kiss. She let him for a few seconds. Then she pushed him back, though not with enough force to free herself from his embrace.
What was that for?
She asked.
It's the least you owe me, isn't it?
Kane said. He sounded childish, needy.
I owe you? You owe me. Besides, I thought you... You know.
His cockiness had given way to petulance, and now his petulance was dissolving into embarrassment and confusion.
You're not very good at this, are you?
Diana mocked.
What am I supposed to say? You're hot, all right?
Diana threw her head back and laughed.
I'm hot? That's what you want to tell me? One minute you're master of the phase, and the next minute you're like a pathetic little kid going for his first kiss.
His face went dark, and she knew immediately she had gone too far. His hand, fingers splayed, was in her face. She tensed, awaiting the blast of energy. For a long time they stood that way, frozen. Diana barely breathed.
You're scared of me after all, Diana,
Kane whispered.
All your attitude and all. And underneath it, you're scared. I can see it in your eyes.
She said nothing. He was still dangerous. At this range, he had the power to kill her with a thought.
Well, I don't want to seem like a pathetic little kid going for his first kiss,
Kane said.
So how about you just give me what I want? How about from now on you just do what I say? You're threatening me?
Kane nodded.
Like you said, Diana, we didn't make the phase. We just live here. Here in the phase, it's all about power. I have it. You don't. I guess we'll see if you're as powerful as you think, Kane.
Diana said, cautious but unbowed.
I guess we'll see.
43. 2 hours, 22 minutes. The daycare had no window facing the plaza. Sam had snuck around into the alley to peek in one of the high-on-the-wall windows. He had seen the coyotes. He had recoiled from the sight of Drake. The coyotes had instantly noted his presence. It was all but impossible to sneak up on them. Drake, looking him right in the eye, had uncoiled his whip hand and languidly drawn the shade. The kids were huddled together, practically on top of one another, solemn and terrified, and half watching The Little Mermaid on the TV. Sam returned to the plaza. Neither Drake nor the coyotes could see him there, but he felt eyes on him just the same. He only slowly became aware of the kid standing beside him. "Who are you? And how did you get there?"
"They call me Bug. I'm good at sneaking up on people."
"I guess you are."
"I have a message for you."
"Yeah? What does my brother want?"
"Kane says it's you or him."
"I figured that."
"He says if you don't do what he says, he'll turn Drake and the coyotes loose on the Prees."
Sam stifled the urge to punch the little monster for the smug way in which he had delivered his vicious threat. "Okay."
"Okay. So everyone has to come out in the open. All your people. Out in the open. Out in the plaza where we can see them. If anyone stays in hiding, you know what happens."
"What else?"
"Your people all set their guns or whatever on the steps of town hall. All your freaks go into the church."
"He's asking me to surrender before we even fight," Sam said. Bug shrugged.
"He said if you argue, Drake is gonna start turning the coyotes loose on one kid at a time. You have to do all this, and then Kane and you go mano a mano. If you win, no problem. Drake lets the littles go. All your side goes free. Kane goes back to Coates."
"Why are you doing this, Bug? You're okay with this? Threatening little kids?" Bug shrugged.
"Man, I'm not gonna mess with Kane or Drake."
Sam nodded. His mind was already elsewhere, trying to find a way, trying to find a path. "Tell Kane I'll answer him in an hour." Bug grinned.
"He said you'd say that. See? He's smart. He said you have to send your answer back with me. Yes or no, with no extras or anything."
Sam glanced at the steeple. He wished Astrid was here. She might have an answer. The terms were impossible. He was absolutely sure, sure beyond any reasonable doubt, that even if he won, even if somehow Kane admitted defeat, Drake would never just walk away. One way or the other, he had to beat Drake as well as Kane. There were 1,000 thoughts in his head, 1,000 fears yammering at him, crowding one another, demanding attention as Bug stared at him, impatient to be on his way. There was no time to make sense of it all, no time to plan, just as Kane had intended. Sam's shoulders slumped. "Tell Kane I accept."
"Okay,"
Bug said, no more concerned than he would have been by an announcement that he was having chicken for dinner. The chameleon blended into the background, all but disappearing. Sam watched him trotting off, a warping of light and image. He soon became impossible to make out. Sam keyed the walkie-talkie. "Astrid, now." Adelio had been watching from his post in the hardware store. He came trotting out. Sam steadied his breathing, kept a careful poker face. There were too many eyes on him, too many people needing to believe in him. On that school bus so long ago, no one had even realized there was a problem before Sam was up and taking charge. It was harder being bold when the whole world seemed to be watching your every move. With Astrid and Adelio beside him, Sam quickly related Kane's terms. "We have very little time. Kane will send that chameleon back to spy right after he reports back to Kane. Kane will move fast. He won't want to give us any time to prepare.
Do you have a plan?
Astrid asked. Kind of. A piece of a plan, anyway. We need to stall a little. Bug sees Kane, Bug comes back. That's probably 5 minutes minimum wherever Kane is. Probably a little more. Then Bug has to see whether we are doing what we've been told to do. He's gonna see people out in the open, and he's gonna see our Coates friends heading into the church. Then he'll report that back. Kane will say, make sure they're all in.
More time.
Astrid nodded agreement.
We don't hurry. In fact, maybe we have to force some of the kids. Maybe they're arguing. You're right, Kane won't show up till he's sure.
If we're lucky, we have a half hour, Adelio said. He glanced at his watch. Not easy to read in the swiftly falling night.
Yeah. Okay. All I've done so far is screw up. So if this is crazy, someone tell me.
You're our guy, Sam, Adelio said. Astrid squeezed his hand. Then here's what we do. Mary read. She sang. She did everything short of tap dance. But there was no distracting the children from the horror before them. With solemn, fearful expressions, they followed Drake's every move. The whip hand filled every eye. Some of the coyotes had gone to sleep. Others, though, eyed the children with a look that could only be described as hungry. Mary wished she had another diazepam, or maybe three, or maybe 10. Her hands shook. Her insides churned. She needed to go to the bathroom, but she needed to stay with the children, too. Her brother, John, was changing a diaper, no different from usual, except that John's mouth was an upside-down U of trembling lips. Mary read,
I would not eat green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am.
And in her head, going around and around like a crazed merry-go-round she could not stop, was the question, what do I do? What do I do if... What do I do when... What do I do? A boy named Jackson raised his hand.
Mother Mary, the dogs stink.
Mary kept reading.
I will not eat them in the rain. I will not eat them on a train.
It was true. The coyotes did stink. The smell of them was suffocating. The heavy scent of musk and dead animals. They urinated freely against crib legs and tables and chose the corner with the dress-up clothes to defecate. But the coyotes were not at ease. Far from it. They were jumpy, nervous, unused to being in an enclosed space, not used to being around humans. Pack leader maintained order with snarls and yips, but even he was jumpy and unsettled. Only Drake seemed at ease. He lounged in the glider that Mary used to rock the tinies to sleep at night or feed them a bottle. He was endlessly fascinated by his whip hand, kept holding it up for inspection, coiling and uncoiling it, reveling in it. Save the kids? Save John? Could she save anyone? Could she save herself? What do I do? What do I do when the killing starts? Suddenly, a girl was there. Taylor. Just there, in the middle of the room.
Hi, I brought food,
she announced. She held a plastic McDonald's tray. It was piled high with uncooked hamburgers. Every coyote head snapped around. Drake was too slow to react, caught off guard. Taylor flung the tray against the common wall shared by the daycare and the hardware store. Meat slid down the gaily painted cinder blocks. Drake's whip hand cracked. But Taylor was gone. The coyotes hesitated only a moment, Then they lunged toward the meat. In a flash, they were snarling and snapping at one another, pushing, jostling, climbing over one another in a feeding frenzy. Drake jumped to his feet and yelled, "Pack leader, get a grip on him!" But Pack Leader had joined the frenzy, laying about him viciously to establish his dominance and his share of the sudden bounty. Two things happened at almost the same instant. The wall shuddered and cracked, and the coyotes nearest to it suddenly floated upward, their paws scrabbling in midair.
"Dekka!"
Drake snarled. There was a blinding flash of green-white light, and like a butane torch cutting through tissue paper, a hole 2 feet across appeared in the cinder block. The hole was high up on the wall, well above the heads of the children, but right about where the suddenly weightless coyotes were floating. One of the coyotes caught a straight blast. The beam of light cut it in two. The segments floated, spraying weightless globules of red. The children screamed, and John screamed, and Drake backed away from the wall, away from the zone of weightlessness. Adelio's head appeared in the hole.
"Mary! Down on the floor!
Everyone get down!"
Mary screamed, and John threw himself onto a runaway toddler. Adelio yelled,
"Sam, go!"
A new hole burned lower down, chest level, and this time the beams of light scoured the room, blasting walls covered in faded art projects, burning through coyotes, setting them alight to float like flaming Macy's parade balloons.
"Okay, Dekka!"
Adelio yelled. The coyotes hit the ground hard, some dead, some alive, but none with any desire for a fight. The door flew open, yanked by some unseen hand, and the animals ran over one another trying to escape.
"Pack leader!"
Drake bellowed.
"You coward!"
The annihilating beam of light swung toward him. He hit the floor, cursing, and rolled out toward the door. Quinn felt, as well as heard, the wall between the daycare and the hardware store rumble and crack. A few seconds later, he saw the coyotes pouring in a panicked jumble into the alley and racing off this way and that. And then Drake appeared. Quinn shrank down behind the parapet. Brianna rushed boldly to look over.
"It's Drake! Now's your chance!"
"Get down, you idiot!"
Quinn hissed. She rounded on him, furious.
"Give me the gun, you wimp!"
"You don't even know how to shoot it,"
Quinn whined.
"Besides, he's probably already gone. He was running."
Brianna looked again.
"He's hiding. He's behind the dumpster."
Quinn nerved himself to look. Just a peek. Just enough to see. Brianna was right. Drake was behind the dumpster, waiting. The back door of the hardware store opened, and Sam emerged alone. He looked left and right, but was unable to spot Drake. Brianna yelled,
"Sam, behind the dumpster!"
Sam whirled, but Drake was too quick. He snapped his whip, slashed Sam's defensive arm, and ran straight at and over Sam. Sam landed on his back and rolled over quickly, but not quickly enough. With inhuman speed, the whip hand sliced the air and cut a bright stripe across Sam's back, right through his shirt. Sam cried out. Brianna began hauling the aluminum ladder to the edge, but her speed betrayed her. She lost control of the ladder, and it clattered down into the alley. Drake had his whip around Sam's throat now, choking, squeezing, killing. Quinn could see Sam's face turning red. Sam thrust his hands back over his shoulders and fired blind. The beam singed Drake's face but did not stop him. He threw Sam hard against the alley wall. Quinn heard the sickening crunch of skull on brick. Sam slumped, barely conscious.
"Forget Kane," Drake crowed. "I'm taking you down myself."
He raised his whip hand, ready to bring it down with enough force to lay Sam open from hip to neck. Quinn fired. The kick of the gun in his hand surprised him. It had happened without conscious thought. He hadn't aimed, hadn't carefully squeezed the trigger like he'd learned to do. He'd just fired on instinct. The bullets left pockmarks in the brick. Drake whirled, and Quinn rose shakily to his feet, standing now in full view.
"You," Drake said.
"I don't want to have to kill anyone,"
Quinn said in a shaky voice that barely carried.
"You'll die for this, Quinn."
Quinn swallowed hard, and this time took careful aim. That was too much for Drake. With a furious snarl, he ran from the alley. Sam was slow getting up. To Quinn, he looked like an old man standing up after slipping on the ice. But he looked up at Quinn and performed a sort of salute.
"I owe you, Quinn. I'm sorry I didn't get him,"
Quinn answered. Sam shook his head.
"Man, don't ever be sorry you don't want to kill someone."
Then, spotting Brianna, he shook off his weariness and said,
"Breeze, with me. Quinn, anyone comes back toward the daycare, you don't have to shoot them, all right? But fire into the air so we know." "I can do that," Quinn said.
Sam ran toward the plaza, confident that Brianna would catch up quickly. She was with him in seconds.
"What's up?"
she asked.
"Everyone's putting on a show of complying with Kane's terms. If we're lucky, Bug will report back that we're obeying before Drake gets back to tell Kane that we've retaken the daycare."
"You want me to go after Drake?"
"Use those fast feet. Find him if you can, but don't try to fight him. Just tell me."
She was gone before he could add, "Be careful." Sam broke into a trot that seemed painfully slow compared with the way Brianna moved. The kids, the normals, more than 100 of them, all who could be rounded up on short notice, were milling around at one end of the plaza. Sam was counting on Kane not knowing exactly how many kids were in Perdido Beach, or how many were in town as opposed to hiding in their homes. He needed to make it look convincing, but Kane's demand left room for some few to still be hidden away with Adelio. Astrid and Little Pete, Decca and Taylor, and the rest of the Coates freaks were entering the church, protesting loudly, making a show of it. Sam strode to the fountain and jumped up on the side.
"Okay, Bug, I know you're watching. Go tell Kane we've done what he asked. Tell him I'm waiting. Tell him if he's not a coward to come here and face me like a man."
He jumped down, ignoring the stares of the 100 or more kids huddled scared and vulnerable in the plaza. Had Bug seen what went down in the daycare? He had certainly heard the shots. Hopefully he would interpret them as coming from Drake himself, or his target practice. And just as dangerous, would Drake be able to warn Kane? He should find out soon. Either way, Sam doubted that Kane could resist a face-to-face confrontation. His ego demanded it. Sam's walkie-talkie crackled. He had the volume turned down low and had to hold it to his ear to hear Astrid.
"Sam.
Are you okay in the church, Astrid?"
"We're both okay. We're all okay. The daycare?"
"Safe."
"Thank God."
"Listen, get everyone in there to lie down. Get them under the pews. That may give them some protection."
"I feel useless here."
"Just keep Little Pete calm. He's the wild card. He's like a stick of dynamite. We don't know what he might do."
"I think a vial of nitroglycerin would be a more apt analogy. Dynamite is actually quite stable."
Sam smiled.
You know, it always gets me hot when you say apt analogy.
Why do you think I do it?
Knowing that she was right there, just 50 feet away, smiling sadly, scared but trying to be brave, sent a wave of longing and worry through him that almost brought tears to his eyes. He wished Quinn had been able to eliminate Drake, but he suspected his friend would not have survived with his soul intact if he had. Some people could do things like that. Some couldn't. That second group were probably the luckier ones.
Come on, Kane, Sam whispered to himself. Let's do this.
Brianna blurred up next to him.
Drake went to his house. You know, the place where he was staying?
Is Kane there?
I don't think so.
Good job, Breeze. Now go into the church. Go slowly so Bug can see you if he's watching.
I want to help.
That's what I need you to do, Brianna. She trudged off, making a show of it. Sam was alone. The normals huddled at the far end of the plaza as Kane had ordered. The freaks, Sam hated using the word, but it was hard not to, were in the church. And now it came down to him and Kane. Would Kane come? Would he come alone? Sam glanced at his watch. In just a little over an hour, it wouldn't matter. From not far enough away, he heard a coyote howl. 44. 1 hour, 6 minutes.
They're doing it!
Bug yelled as he burst through the door.
All right, Kane said. Showtime. Everyone load up. Into the cars.
There was a scramble for the door. Chaz, Chunk, Mallet, and a much-abashed Frederico, who had finally freed himself from duct tape bondage, all raced for the station wagon in the garage. Diana, oozing suppressed rage from every pore, followed. Panda grabbed Lana by the arm and pushed her toward the door. Only then did Kane realize someone was missing.
Where's Howard?
I don't know,
Panda admitted.
I didn't see him leave.
Useless worm. Without Ork, he's dead weight, Kane said.
Forget him.
The second car in the garage was a luxury car, an Audi with a sunroof. Panda jumped behind the wheel, and Diana rode shotgun. Kane took the back seat for himself. Panda pushed the automatic garage door remote control. Both doors rose. Both cars lurched forward. The Subaru wagon promptly crunched into the side of the Audi. Chaz was driving the wagon. He rolled down his window.
Sorry.
Great start,
Diana said.
Go,
Kane ordered tersely. Panda accelerated into the street, keeping his speed to a prudent 25 miles per hour. The wagon stayed a block back.
Ba-da-bump, 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 bump, bum,
Diana began humming the William Tell overture.
Knock it off, Kane snapped.
They had gone 2 blocks when Panda slammed on the brakes. A dozen coyotes streaked across the street. Kane rose up through the sunroof and yelled,
What are you doing? Where are you going?
Pack leader stopped and glared with yellow eyes.
Whip hand gone,
he snarled.
What? What happened at the daycare?
Whip hand go. Pack leader go,
the coyote said.
No way,
Kane said. To Diana, he said,
They've got the daycare. What do I do?
You tell me, fearless leader.
Kane slammed his fist down on the roof of the car.
Okay, pack leader. Unless you're a coward, follow me.
Pack leader follows the